This week, after what can only be described as a completely shitty childhood, without friends or family, but full of religious guilt and parental abuse, Linda was just aching to get out as quickly as possible. She was okay being ostracized by her family, that is, until she found out what kind of man she'd run away with. It took her a lifetime, but Linda's learned that running away from a problem is not the same as running towards a solution. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips. Oh.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of My Crazy Divorce. I'm your host, Tom Milligan. I know I say this all the time, but I really had a great time recording this episode. Linda, this week's guest, has really been through the ringer. Her story really made me appreciate my parents for how they raised me. There are some serious religious influences in this week's story. And if you've listened to the show, you know I'm fascinated by all religion. So I'm excited to get right to it. But first, as always, remember that I'm not an attorney or a therapist, so nothing on this show should ever be mistaken as legal or therapeutic advice. Please seek out the appropriate professional if you need that type of support. Also, I'm always looking for guests for the show. So if your divorce story is a crazy one, I want to hear about it. Please visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the apply to be a guest button. It only takes a minute, and I promise we'll have a great time recording the show. Also, if you'd like to watch this or any previous episodes instead of just listening, the easiest way to find them is to visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Watch on YouTube button on the left side of the page. All right? Let's meet Linda.
Linda, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to hear your story today.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to share it finally after all these years.
Yeah, and some people share sooner than others. So I'm honored that you've chosen our forum to share.
Thank you.
All right, let's get started as we always do. Let's learn about Linda. Where are you from?
Born and raised in California and in a small town of Roland Heights, LA County area. It's by West Covina, by that area. My mother and my father are immigrants from Nicaragua. So Central America.
Okay.
And
Nicaragüense.
Yes, very proud. And I'm one of three girls. So they just had three girls. I'm going to give you a little bit of idea of my father's thoughts, having three girls,
okay,
right? So my parents started off in Baldwin Park and bought up their first home there as immigrants, very proud. But soon after they bought, a family that had two older sons that looked kind of sketchy moved in. My sister was under five, so that means I was about 3 years old. And the man put it up for sale. My father put it up for sale. And he goes, I will not raise my girls next door to teenage boys. So very strict Latino family. That's where I came from. So we moved to Roland Heights. We were in the neighborhood that we moved to. We were literally the only Latino family there. It was, so that's where I grew up. Soon after moving, my parents became Jehovah Witnesses.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a whole other podcast, Tom.
Well, so were they Catholic
yes,
before?
Yes, very much Catholic. And we celebrated
really?
Every event. And yeah, so I can remember, I believe my last Christmas was when I was five. So that was the last Christmas that we celebrated as a family. So.
And then as a Jehovah's Witness family, of course, we don't do.
We don't do anything. We don't celebrate anything. We have a big extended family and my parents just kind of took us away from that. So I wasn't raised with cousins, with aunts, uncles. We knew about them. They knew about us and we would see each other once in a while. But my parents very much secluded us.
Okay, so I have to ask, you told me earlier that you're an avid listener.
Yeah.
You know that I'm fascinated by religion. I'm not religious, but I'm fascinated. So your parents were active Catholic. They both were born and raised,
yes,
I assume.
Yes.
We've talked about it before. We joke around that there are Catholics and then there are Catholics. And it sounds like your parents were Catholics, yes. Like hardcore.
My mother went to a nun school, not to become a nun, but the nuns taught that school. So that's how Catholic okay. they were.
Yeah, like Blues Brothers. Right. She was taught by the Penguins. Yes. And so, but how do you know the story? Did they came by to sell Atalaya or
no.
what?
No, Dad, I don't want to say a typical Hispanic man, but my dad, very much a womanizer, drank a lot, very abusive as we were growing up. So she went to work. She always worked outside of the home, and she had a coworker who was a JW, who was a Jehovah's Witness. And somehow the coworker zoomed in on my mother being an abused wife. And if anybody knows anything about Jehovah's Witnesses, they zoom in on stuff. Like whether you have somebody that just passed away, then they'll connect to that. So she connected to my mother and she said, let me give you Bible studies and hopefully that will help your husband calm down. And yes, that lady came every week and gave my mom Bible studies. My dad fought it for a long time because he didn't want to give up smoking. He didn't want to give up drinking. He didn't want to give up, you know, his attitude, but finally he gave in and that's how it became. Now the vices stopped, but the abuse didn't.
How about the womanizing?
The womanizing, we think it stopped.
Which is a form of abuse.
Right, right. But we think that part stopped, but who knows? But the abuse, cussing at us, hitting at physical abuse, emotional abuse. And then in the same hour, we would all drive to the Kingdom Home and he would give his big speech. He grew in the church. He grew fast in the church.
So it may have fed his ego
yes.
a little. So, okay, by the way, I know that you said if you don't know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses, they will zoom in on something. Yeah, any religion with missionaries does that, by the way. I was a Mormon missionary. Did the same thing. Find the weakness.
Exactly.
I'm not against religion. It's not for me.
Right.
But there's a playbook.
Exactly.
And they all use it.
Yeah, very much.
So you were about 5 when this all came about. So you grew up going to Kingdom Hall.
3-4 times a week, grew up going door to door, grew up going to these conventions, and everything was about the religion. It was, now, did I believe it? Tom, from a very young age, and my sisters can attest to this, I always questioned it. I always said, how is that God? How are they preaching on one side that it's a loving God, but in the other side, if I don't follow him, he's going to destroy me in Armageddon? Like, how is that possible?
Yes.
And I remember that very young. But as all good JWs, you don't question it.
Right.
You just go. And I always fought it. I was their rebellious child. I'm also the middle child. So I was one person at home, but then tried to be somebody else in school. I just wanted to be normal. That's all I wanted. I wanted a normal childhood. I wanted to celebrate people's birthdays. I wanted to do that. But it was my parents. I was my parents' nightmare. I was like fighting it. And then I was like, there was no fighting. I knew, Tom, at 18, I was leaving. I'm leaving the house. I knew that. But so I went through the emotions wow. as a teenager because there was no fighting my dad. It was yeah. I was getting beat all the time. I was getting yelled at. I was getting called a whore because I was interested in boys. I went through a normal teenage. Yes, I was being called all sorts of names. So I just, okay, I'll go through the emotions. But the minute I turn 18, I'm out. And that was my plan since I was a little girl.
Wow. That sounds, hate to say this, I mean, I hope we can talk a little bit more about your childhood, but it sounds horrible.
It was a very traumatic childhood. Very traumatic.
So I'm going to ask a couple of quick sure. questions about the religion, because when we've done 2 or 3 episodes, including next week's episode, this week's, it's coming out this week, has a lot of Mormon undertones. And I can speak to that. We used to, quote, compete with, we used to call them J-Dubs, as Mormon missionaries. Mm-hmm. We would be knocking doors and we'd look down the street and the J-Dubs were coming down the same street.
Yes.
And we always thought it was interesting because these poor people living on the street are getting their doors knocked by these competing missionaries. And so I did some study, not a lot, I admit. And I learned that one of the basic tenets of the Jehovah's Witness dogma, belief system, is that there was no cross.
Correct.
That Jesus was hung on a pole.
Correct. Yes.
I'm not sure why that's a big deal to them.
Oh, idolatry. So we all wear the crosses, or everybody wears crosses, not supposed to believe in anything tangible. Your faith and everything should be in Jehovah.
Right. But I mean, if it's a stick or a pole, it's the same thing, right? I mean, just because there are two poles crossing each other doesn't make it any different.
Correct.
Anyway, whatever. But I always thought that was interesting that they made such a big deal about what seemed to be, who cares? He's hung on a pole or on a cross. He's still, again, if you're a religious person, he's still your savior.
Right.
Okay, so then the other thing is the 144,000. Mm. If I understand things correctly, in the book of Revelations, there is a reference to the 144,000 that are basically the elect of God and that will make it to heaven.
The anointed.
Is that
correct? So they will rule with Jesus after Armageddon. So in paradise. Okay. So he's coming, he's going to clean out, and the 144,000 will be anointed, are the anointed who are going to go rule with him in the new world.
So my question has always been, and I've never gotten a good answer, because I've always asked practicing Jehovah's Witnesses. So here we are, an opportunity for me to ask a non-practicing J-Dub, why do they keep adding people? Shouldn't you stop at 144,000? Because in 144,001, you're out, pal.
Well, the 144,000 are going to rule with Jesus. Those aren't the ones that are going to roam the new earth. See, those are the ones that are going to be up in the heavens ruling with Jesus.
Oh, that's the ruling class,
yes,
basically.
They're not the ones that are going to roam. They're not the rest of the J-Dubs that are going to roam. Now, you do believe that it's not everybody who's going to make it. It's the followers of Jehovah's Witnesses, right?
Of course, so, right. Just like Mormons believe that only Mormons.
It's not the anointed are the 144 who are going to rule the kingdom. And then the rest of them are going to start life again, like Noah did in the beginning of time. They're going to start populating the new system of things, the new earth.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Again, someone else that's listening is probably going, who the hell cares? But so let's talk more about your childhood a little bit. So you grew up in, what was the name of the town?
Roland Heights. Yes.
And, you know, as you were growing up, junior high school, you started to like boys, you center, or were you like the cheerleader girl?
Oh, no.
Were you...
we couldn't be active in anything.
Oh.
So no sports, no clubs, no friends. We couldn't hang out with people outside of the religion. So no friends, no association. Now, on top of that, my parents didn't believe in friends. My mom said, you have two sisters, you don't need friends. So even being secluding us from the non-JWs, even with the JWs themselves, she didn't want us to be friends. So we were literally just the Urbina girls, meaning me and my two sisters. Those were my friends.
I'm sorry. It's not often that I'm speechless. I've never heard. I mean, I'd forgotten that you couldn't be part of clubs and stuff like that as a Jehovah's Witness. So that part, quote, makes sense. But not having friends, even within the Jehovah's Witness religion, that's a parents thing, not
absolutely
a Jehovah's Witness thing, correct?
Absolutely. That is my parents thing. Now, speaking as an adult, when I meet other ex-J-Dubs, we compare stories. And I'm like, oh, I didn't get to do that. Some ex-J-Dubs got to go to football games. They got to go to school dances. And I was like, wait a minute. Now, also, not only that, Tom, but the standards between the J-Dubs, the English congregation and the Spanish congregations, are very different. So I went to high school with two J-Dubs that were from the English congregations. They participated in homecomings. They went to football games. Now, with the Spanish congregations, that's unheard of. No way, no how. You don't even ask to go to school functions. So even within the religion, it's split.
Well, of course. I mean, and that makes sense, because just like we were saying before, there are Catholics and there are Catholics.
Right.
There are J-Dubs and there are J-Dubs.
Right. And then there's my parents on top of that.
Right.
Who are very strict.
Shiite. They're like Shiite J-Dubs.
Right.
And you don't want to bash. I don't want to sound like I'm bashing any religion, although, again, I think it's kind of ridiculous. But, I mean, I live in a camper. If you could see, my kitchen is about 4 feet to my right. My bedroom is about 10 feet to my left. And this is it. And I bought this camper 4 or 5 months ago from a Jehovah's Witness. And we got talking and I said, so where's your Kingdom Hall? And he said, oh, it's right down on just off of 77, Highway 77. I didn't know where that was. Turns out it's about four blocks that way. I live four blocks from Kingdom Hall, and I got to give him his trailer hitch back. So I'm trying to figure out when they meet.
Yeah. Sundays and Wednesdays, they have Bible studies, and sometimes on Tuesdays too. I'm telling you, I was going 3 to 4 days a week.
Sure. Yeah. Again, that sounds like Mormonism. Yeah. So tell me about your sisters, though. Were they as rebellious?
On the down low. On the down low. Now, the firstborn wanted to always please my parents. So she did everything right. She was even their eyes. So we are only 2 years apart. And when I started getting into my horror stage, liking boys, she would run to my parents and tell them, I saw Linda talking to somebody at school. I saw Linda, and there went the beating. Or I would get locked in my room. It was, so she was their eyes. That was the oldest. The youngest did it the very smart way, Tom. She did everything right, the baby. She did her traditional. She had the same plan, I think, but she kept it very quiet. But her plan, instead of just running away at 18, she started applying for colleges. And although that was looked very frowned upon by the religion, you don't go to college. You don't go to college. Higher learning was...
Wait a minute. Just women or anyone?
Anyone. Unless you're going to college to become a doctor or an attorney, and you're going to serve Bethel. Bethel is their like hub in New York. So they would approve you to go to college if that was your plan, to become a doctor or an attorney to serve Bethel. Now, my sister...
Oh, because Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in, really, they don't believe in getting blood.
They believe in medicine, but they don't believe in blood. But they don't believe in higher learning because why, Tom? Armageddon's coming. So why? Your time should be spent preaching. That's your time should be spent. Why are you going to college? Because Armageddon's coming.
How do they convince people to join this church?
I don't know. And I still ask myself that. I still think, like, what are you thinking? Now, Armageddon, when I was growing up, I remember Armageddon coming in 1974, and Armageddon in the 80s, right. And then again in the 90s, and again in, oh my gosh, Y2K, that was Armageddon. But don't you think at a certain point you're thinking, okay, Armageddon hasn't came, so I'm just going to live my life.
Yeah, it's like the boy who cried wolf, mm-hmm. Right? At some point, someone has to say, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's not happening. But no, and from what I hear, the religion is growing. So there's out. I believe, just like why my father, I believe why my father is still in it, is to keep him in check and keep him in track. And he earned power within the religion. So now it's that.
It's an ego.
Are they happy? They're still very much in it. Are they happy? Absolutely not. Most miserable people you will meet. I love my parents. I respect them. I love them. They're totally different grandparents to my children. So I appreciate that. And that's how I have forgiven my traumatic childhood, because they've superseded their title as grandparents.
Yeah. So, okay. So you just answered a few questions with that last statement. So, but I'm going to ask a couple more. So basically your parents are still alive.
Yes.
They are still married and they are still active in the J-Dub. Okay. I want to go back, and I apologize right up front for asking such personal questions. I want to understand, you said that's when the beatings happened, and I want to understand, I grew up in the most loving household in the world, and I didn't realize till I was much older how lucky I had it. I mean, I guess I just didn't understand how many kids didn't have what I had. And so my heart goes out to you. It really does. And to anyone who had to deal with that. But right now I'm talking to you. So my question is, without going into like graphic detail, help me understand. I mean, I got spanked. I mean, when I did something bad, and it only happened 2 or 3 times into my entire recollection, we'd go into my parents' bedroom, and my mom would be sitting on the bed crying, and my dad would say, Thomas, drop your drawers. And I would drop my pants, so I got a bare butt, and he would take off his belt, and he said, 2 if you take it like a man, 10 if I have to hold you down. And my brothers and I, we were all joking about this just a few months ago. None of us ever got more than 2 because that scared the living shit out of us.
Right, right.
So that's the closest I ever got to a beating. And that was nothing. Tell me about your beating.
Where do I start? I mean, I have stories after stories. It's my dad would, they're both laborers, immigrants, not educated. So my dad was always a factory worker, and he worked in downtown LA. From downtown LA to our home, it's about 45 minutes in heavy traffic. Let's just say when my dad came home, we scattered. We scattered like little roaches. My dad's home, because we didn't know what mood he was going to be in. If it was heavy traffic, you couldn't even look at him. If he asked you, another thing is they've been in this country for years and years, but they don't speak English. So we, as little girls, and I'm talking five years old, maybe even younger, we had to translate the correspondence to them. Any bill, sure. Anything that he couldn't read. And if we didn't translate appropriately or where his liking is, we'd get hit in the head or we'd get hit. We'd get beat. Another thing is my family back home, back in the motherland in Nicaragua, my family they had pig farms. And in pig farms, I don't know if you've ever seen a pig whip. It's basically two leather strings attached to a stick, two leather strings. Okay. That was our belt. So he would just carry that with him and he'd whip us to where we had welts. We had welts and we were girls. And not to say that's okay for a boy, but we were girls and he would get us like that. Yeah, very. Yeah. You think with a father and daughter, it's like my little girl, she can do no wrong. No, we were his punching bags. We were literally his punching bags. Now, I'll give you one that I'll never forget. My younger sister, we're 6 years apart. My older sister and I were only 2 years apart. So, of course, my older sister and I are close, where there's a little bit of an age gap with the little one. When she was 3 years old, my older sister and I went to play. And we went to play. We were only allowed to play in the grass, in the front yard, on the grass. Never on the sidewalk, never beyond that. On the grass of our property. We weren't allowed to talk to neighbors. We weren't just to play with each other. And we did. My younger sister at 3 years old wanted to play with us. And because she was the favorite, we were like, we knew she was made of glass, right? So we were like, no, we don't want to play with you. We don't want to play with you. Well, my mom came out, she said, go play with them. You have to play with them. Somehow, Tom, my little sister stepped in the hole in the grass, fell down, and broke her arm. Crying, of course, she was only 3 years old. She kept holding her arm. Well, before my dad and my mom took her to the hospital, they beat the living crap out of my older sister and I. I mean, beat us, Tom, because we let her fall.
Bam. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I'm so sorry. That's
The childhood I had.
I will tell you, I'm the youngest of five boys, and I promise my brothers did not get hit when I got hurt.
Right.
Because I think I got hurt more than all four of them combined.
Right? Yeah. And it just happens. Children fall and children get hurt. And somehow we didn't watch her closely enough. So, yeah, that was the worst beating.
That breaks my heart.
That was the worst beating. And like I said, we were young. My older sister blames my dad a lot for it. And I seem to blame my mom because as a mom, Tom, if somebody looks at my kids wrong, I'm like, oh, no. I'll step in. I'll take the beating. And my mom had a lot to do with that my dad's anger.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Again, I hear stories like that, and it just makes me grateful for what I had. And thank you for sharing that. So you turn 18.
I turn 18. And
did you follow the plan?
I followed the plan. I didn't do it the right way. What happened was I met an older guy. And he knew my family. He knew what was going on. And he gave me the out. So he said, he's 8 years older than me. So I turned 18. He's already established. And he said, let's go. And Tom, I was still 18 at school. I shouldn't say I went with the plan. So I finished high school.
Okay. So you waited till graduation.
Yes. So I waited to grad night. Grad night here, you go to Disneyland. Back in the day, you went to Disneyland, you spent all night. I said I was going. Well, because I was 18, they couldn't stop me. So, and they already, I think my parents already smelled that I was really going to take off, right? So he took me to grad night and I never went back home. I stayed out. I left. And it was like, they tracked me down. The elders from the Kingdom Hall tracked me down. And they were trying to convince me because my dad, remember I told you, my dad worked his way up in the church. So that's going to look really bad upon my dad. One of his sheep took off. with a man and not even married. You know what I mean? So, so
that might put his ruling class at risk.
Yes, definitely. So the Algers had a lot to do with it. They called me. They were begging me back to come back home. I was like, no. My mom called me and told me her, my dad, and my sisters were dead. As far as I was concerned, I didn't have family. They were dead. They don't call them. Don't. They turned their backs on me. Now, the only one that said, fuck that, was my older sister. She was like, She was still in the religion. She still maintained that she was 2 years older. She still stayed, but she understood why I left. And she still stayed in communication with me. So it was 2 years of just me being by myself. Now, remember how I grew up? I grew up under a rock. I wasn't worldly at all. So yeah.
Didn't ever drink?
Nothing, Tom. Never drink. I didn't.
Never kissed a boy?
Nothing. You could put drugs in front of me. I had no idea what it was.
So Linda, that's just, it's almost sad that you went through your whole hoe phase without being a hoe.
Without being a hoe. Right?
It's a pseudo.
Yes. I should have became a hoe and really said, man, if they're going to call me that, I might as well be it. Right? But yeah, I went through my hoe phase without being a hoe. So needless to say, I didn't know how to be a wife. I didn't know how to be a significant other to this older guy who, you know, he wasn't JW, so he was very worldly. Long story short, after 2 years, I became pregnant with my oldest daughter, and my sister went and told my parents, she's pregnant, and you guys aren't going to be part of her life. Don't expect me to not be part of my first niece's life. So then they came back because it was their first granddaughter. It was their first everything. So they did come back, never an apology, which I don't expect. But like I said, Tom, the minute my daughter was born, they became totally different grandparents than they were parents. Even being in the religion, they showed her love. They showed her, my mom and dad growing up never told us they loved us. They loved us. We wouldn't even, if my mom would have said, I love you and kissed us goodnight, what the heck? Are we going to die? Yeah, are we going to die? So the minute my daughter was born was the minute that my family would say, I love you to each other and to her. Yeah,
really?
She was our reason to say it. We never said it before, but the minute my daughter was born, it's like a whole different life came. We became closer. They didn't care that I was worldly. They didn't care that I wasn't in the religion anymore. All they cared about was their granddaughter. And because of that, Tom, I have forgiven them over and over again. Without even having to be asked to be forgiven, I forgive them over and over because they are great grandparents.
I'm going to throw a little interjection, or I'm going to interject here for a second. I do a lot on TikTok, and I posted a thing about how my ex-wife had cheated on me, and I forgave her. I haven't forgotten what she did, but I forgive her. And somebody, meaning, posted a comment that said, if you still remember, no, forgiving literally does mean forgetting. So if you still remember, you haven't forgiven. Mm. And I'm going, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And I just thought of that as you were talking about your parents. You're never going to forget.
I'll never, because that's who's made me. Now, I've also said, growing up, Tom, I've always said, I'm never going to be my mom. I'll never be my mom, which is the funny part because get this, I'm named after my mom. Even my last name, my most recent last name is my mother's maiden name. So I'm very much my mom, right? In that way.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
In that way. But I'll never be my mom. So my mom was my lesson to not be that mom. So I can't forget. I can't forget where I came from or how I was raised because I want to make sure my kids never experienced what I've experienced.
Of course. Yeah. I respect that 100%. And the fact that you can forgive me says a lot about you. So I think that's great. Yeah, I don't, obviously, as I've said, I never experienced anything like that. So I can't say how I would, if I could have ever forgiven my parents if they treated me that way. But I'm telling you right now, I couldn't. I'm not that big of a person.
Yeah.
So you move out at 18-ish, mm-hmm. right after 18. You move in with this 26-year-old guy. You're living in sin, in real hoe phase, right? According to dad, probably. How long were you with him?
When my daughter was 3 months old, I found he was being unfaithful. Now, he was an established man, had his own business, still has his own business. And I found his secretary in my home. when my daughter was 3 months old. And remember, I told you my dad was a womanizer. So yeah. I knew about my dad's affairs. I knew about that. So to me, that triggered me. I grabbed my baby. I grabbed a diaper bag and I went outside and I asked the neighbor for a phone and I called my mom and I sat on the corner waiting for my mom and I never went back. Now,
wow,
yeah,
good for
yeah,
you.
I never went back. And that divorce, Tom, the most ideal divorce. We both said I was young, he was whoever he is, you know yeah. what I mean? So we both said, what's the best thing for our daughter? And it was to have her, both of her parents in the life. Never asked for child support, Tom. I never kept her away from him. He is a big part of her life still. As a matter of fact, I just came back from having a celebration in his home. So we are still wow. very close. If anything, that first marriage, I would have, in my past, I would have called him my best friend. He taught me how to grow up after that. He taught me how to grow up. Again, because of the kind of father that he was, I forgave the infidelity, but I wasn't going to go through it. I wasn't going to forgive him and stay there. Because to me, once a cheater, I was a cheater. That's my dad, right? So I was out. Yeah, I was out.
So wait a minute. I didn't know you got married. Yeah. Well, how long were you together when you got married?
When I found out I was pregnant. So 2 years
okay, after. So you had been 2 years
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, we got married and it didn't last very long. Like I said, yeah, my daughter obviously. Was 3 months old when I found out.
So basically.
Yeah. And it was okay. like, listen, I'm going to go get a divorce attorney. He said, I'm going to go get a divorce attorney. You let him know what you want. We were a young couple. We didn't have anything. So I was like, I just want my daughter to be happy. All right. We didn't even have a custody plan. It was, hey, I want to pick up the baby. Okay, what time? This time. All right. She has a doctor's appointment. Do you want to go with me or do you want me to just take her? No, you go ahead and take her. Or yeah, I'll meet you there. Sporting events. My daughter was raised in sports and sporting events, people would trip out because him and I would always be sitting together. And it was just, we were her parents. We still are her parents very much. Yeah.
Man, if we could just end this show right now and say, ladies and gentlemen, this is how it's supposed to be done.
Yes.
Now, I get there are times that there's more that needs to be divided and everything. But the way that you said that, the main thing is just we have a daughter and let's figure out how to do this right for her.
Right.
Okay. If you base your from if you were getting nothing from this show today other than if you have kids, that should be the number one through 1,000 priority.
You want to know my theories? Love your children more Please. Than you hate your ex.
That's beautifully mm-hmm. said. That's perfectly said.
An amicable divorce, sometimes referred to as uncontested or collaborative divorce, has been proven to provide better outcomes for everyone involved. I'll share the easiest way you can accomplish a collaborative divorce by using OurDivorce.com. But first, you'll want to understand why it's so important. Reason number one, a collaborative divorce is better. An amicable divorce costs a lot less. The average cost of a divorce in the U.S. is over $15,000, primarily in attorney's fees. With OurDivorce.com, it only costs $299, and payment isn't required until you print your final documents. Reason number two, why a collaborative divorce is better. An amicable divorce is faster. A contested divorce takes an average of 11 months to go through the court system. With OurDivorce.com, it can take as little as a couple of hours, as quickly as both parties can agree and work through our simple three-step process. Reason number three, a collaborative divorce is better. A collaborative divorce is just easier. When you involve angry people and a bunch of lawyers, it always gets complicated. With OurDivorce.com, as long as you and your spouse can commit to being civil and work through the process, there doesn't have to be fighting or a bunch of legal paperwork and confusion going back and forth between lawyers. Reason number four, a collaborative divorce is better. An uncontested divorce gives you more control rather than leaving decision to the lawyers or a judge. With OurDivorce.com, you're in full control of directing the outcomes that are best for both parties, and especially any children. Reason number five, a collaborative divorce is better. After an amicable divorce, you have the ability to focus on your needs and the needs of the children rather than focusing on a broken relationship with your ex-spouse. This means less stress on you and your children. At OurDivorce.com, we always hope that couples can remain married. But when that isn't possible, we give you the tools to have an amicable, collaborative, and uncontested divorce so that you can maintain control while working through the process more quickly. Just go to OurDivorce.com to learn more or to get started today.
Unfortunately, the feel-good part, I think, is coming to an end
right
here.
I get divorced and I had a little bit of a hoe stage.
Okay, so you had a real hoe phase.
And from that hoe phase came out my second born, a son. And that was just a relationship. It lasted years, but I'm not even counting it. He decided he didn't want to be a dad. He took off. So here I was left as a single mom of two now. And we fast forward to when the kids were, I would say, going into their preteen 8 years. I was left by myself with two preteens, right? The dad of my oldest, the dad of my daughter, being the man that he is, he stepped up and he said, "Don't worry about it. I know that's not my biological son, but he's mine now." So he helped me out a lot. He actually helped me in that custody case. So he paid for an attorney for me to have that custody case.
Wow, what a great guy.
Yeah, but that one wasn't even bad either. The guy just didn't want to be in my son's life. So he just took off. You know, haven't even heard from him. My son's now 20, going on 26. Haven't even heard from him. So that wasn't even a tumultuous divorce or separation. He just left.
And you were together then?
We were together for 9 years. Yeah.
We don't count it, but that's 9 years. But
I shouldn't say we don't count it because we have a son out of it. And just because he disappeared, he didn't want us in his life. So I'm just like,
yeah.
And then.
So he takes off 10, your kid's 10 or 11 years old. He bolts and hasn't looked back.
Has not.
Talk about the antithesis of guy number one. Now, guy number one cheated, so there's that shitty part of him. But other than that, wow.
Now, remember the celebration I just got back from his house? That was my son's baby shower. My daughter's father and his wife hosted my son's baby shower. Somebody that's not DNA tied to him.
Yeah, unheard of.
Right. Now, don't you ever tell him that's not his son. That's another thing. Don't ever tell that man that is not his son. Yes, biologically, that is not his son, but that is his son. In his mind, he's raised him. That is his son. And my son calls him dad.
I'm blown away. That's fantastic. I love hearing that.
The love of the children.
So, once again, exactly. Once again, maybe I'm going to be proven wrong here, but the feel-good part is coming to an end because we're getting to the bad part here.
The bad part, Tom. Yeah. So working as a minimal clerical person at this hospital town. And one thing about me is because of the way I was raised, I have attachment personality. So I attach myself to somebody that winks at me. I'm thinking we're in love, right? Yeah. So sure as shit, somebody winked at me. And being a single mom of two preteens, I wanted, even though they had a good father and mother and their village was strong, meaning my sisters and their significant others and my parents, their village was strong. I still wanted to give them a home, like a mom and a dad figure. And I met a nurse at the hospital that I was working at, and he didn't have any kids. He was already established. And we dated for a short time and we soon moved in together.
How soon is soon?
Within 3 months, we moved in together and he stepped up and I want to raise your, I don't have my own kids. So I want to raise your kids like they were mine. And that was everything I wanted. That was just, okay, I can do this. This is it. We can do this. That was, I would say, let's say in March, and by October, I became pregnant. Yeah.
There we go. So you met like January-ish.
Right. March.
What year is
this? This is 2006.
Okay.
2006 going into 2007.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this math.
Yeah.
I know I'm not supposed to ask. How old are you?
I'm 48. I'll be 49 in February.
Congratulations. You look fantastic. I've been sitting here thinking you were in your early
40s. Oh, thank you.
So 2006, January-ish, 2006, you meet this guy.
Yes.
And what do we call him?
Paul.
Paul. And for those listening, we did establish Paul is not his real name. So you meet Paul.
I meet Paul.
January 2006. You move in March-ish. And in October, you're pregnant.
I'm pregnant. And so, like I said, he didn't have children. He was one, or he is one of five. So he's the baby of the five. Raised Mormon.
Oh.
Yes, raised Mormon. And his mother, the funny part about it now, if you're counting, yes, I have three babies with three different dads, right? His yep. mother has five with three different dads, but yet I was never good enough. I was never good enough for her son. Couldn't stand me, Tom. She could not stand me. I was uneducated. He had his bachelor's. I didn't have my bachelor's. Now, let me describe her. Tall, Caucasian, redhead. When I first met, and she says, where are you from? And I said, oh, I was born and raised in California, but my parents are from Nicaragua. First statement out of her mouth, don't you people climb mango trees? Don't my people wow. climb mango trees? That should have been my red flag. I should have been out.
Wow. Yeah. Let's start with the racism.
Right off the bat.
Day one.
Right off the bat. That's why she couldn't stand. I'm saying that's why she couldn't stand me. And I know we shouldn't talk about the dead, but that lady, oh, Tom, she was horrible. Now, the funny part about it is her last husband was first generation Mexican. So I'm first generation Nicaraguan. So, and he actually spoiled the crap out of her, bought her a house and helped her raise her kids. Now her kids weren't, they were trouble. We're talking drugs and running away, and they were trouble. And this person, this man stepped in and helped her raise her kids, but she did not like brown people. Did not, Tom, like brown people. And she was very vocal about it. Hmm. Yeah.
So I guess I'm glad that I never understood that, and I hope I never do. So let's go back though, because we haven't talked about Paul at all. We know that he has a bitch of a mother, but other than that, we don't know anything about him. He's the youngest of five.
Youngest of five.
He's a Mormon.
Was raised in the Mormon church. I wasn't practicing when I met him, but was raised in it. He was married before me. So he did have, but no kids. So I think his first wife, it lasted nothing but 2 years. And they got divorced very amicably, went their separate ways, and that's that. And like I said, he was the ideal guy. He was a nurse, which we know they make pretty good money. And they do okay. And he promised me stability. And that's what I was looking for, stability. I promised to help make a home with my children.
So he's the youngest. Mm-hmm. So the mother's, you said her last husband was a Mexican. Mm-hmm. So does this mean that Paul is half?
Okay, so I did count him as the dad, but come to find out, no, that's not his biological dad. But the Mexican adopted him.
Oh,
from
okay.
the previous man.
Okay, so she didn't have any kids with her last husband.
Right, the last husband. But Paul has his last name and was raised with him.
Okay, got it. Okay, so and where did he grow up?
He grew up in a little town in Southern California, in Laverne. Okay. He grew up there, went up to junior high. And then they moved right before high school, they moved to the high desert in California. So he finished there, first became a fireman. And then, he first went into the Navy. And then when he got out of the Navy, he served his 4 years, got out of the Navy, became a fireman. And then he didn't like that. So then he went to nursing school.
Okay. So he's been around the block.
Yeah.
And gets married, doesn't have kids, gets divorced amicably from wife number
Correct.
One. How long was he divorced before you met?
Probably a year, if that.
Okay, so it was pretty
quick
for
too.
Him, too. And how long were they married, did you say?
Maybe 2 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Maybe 2 years.
And is he older than you or about your same age?
He's 4 years older than me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so in 2006, you would have been whatever that is, 31?
31, 32,
32.
Right.
And he was 35-ish.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm getting the lay of the land here.
Yes.
So you've got a nurse at the hospital. You've got a secretary, mm-hmm. I think is what you said, at the hospital. He winked at you, so you're therefore getting married.
Yes.
3 months later, you move in together. 6 months later, you're pregnant. Right. When did you get married?
I was already pregnant with our son. So we got married when we found out I was pregnant.
Did he propose, or was it just the doctor told us we were in love, so let's get married?
Basically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Did he buy you a ring?
He did. He bought me a ring.
Okay. Was it a decent ring?
It was good. It was nice. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start asking this question. I'm going to try and remember to do this. I've never asked this on this show. Do you still have it?
I do. I didn't think about that, but I do still have it. The ongoing joke with my sisters is I collect wedding rings.
Well, you know that you can sell those.
I know. But one day, this particular one, I probably won't give to my son just because it has very bad juju or whatever. But I still have my very first wedding ring. I still have my the second person did propose to me and gave me one. So I still have those two. And one day, if one of my kids wants them and redo them or do whatever they want with them, go ahead. But this other one, this last one, I might just bury somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, then. I think that's hilarious. My divorce a few years ago, my ex and I, we split very amicably and we agreed to sell her ring and split it.
Oh, wow. That was very nice of her.
Yeah, we fought about it a little bit. I mean, kind of you screwed two of my coworkers. Oh. I think you owe me something. All right. So you're married, or you get married.
Right.
Were you married like in a church, or did you just go to the courthouse?
We just went to the courthouse. Yeah.
All right. So there was no romance at all in this engagement or wedding.
Right.
Okay. All right. So you're married. How's life?
Before the baby was born, Tom, I would say life was how I wanted it to be. It was all about the two older kids, taking them to sports. He was very involved. As a matter of fact, my son, my middle son, was very rambunctious and just, he's a boy, right? And I was always being called. I still maintained my job, pregnant and everything. So I was always being called into the office with my middle son, and Paul would work nights. So instead of me having to leave work, Paul would go pick him up. If he was in the principal's office, Paul would meet with the teacher. If my daughter's dad couldn't make it, then Paul would step in. And that was exactly what I wanted. He knew who the first husband was. He knew the first husband was very much involved in the kid's life. So never had a problem, Tom. He did not have a problem. He was like, yeah, we're a village. We're a team. Yes, this was it. So
he sounds great.
So I had my ideal life until my baby was born. The true colors came out. Everything that had to do with that baby, he had to do. He had to wake up with the baby. He had to feed the baby. He had to hold the baby first.
How long did it take for his milk to come in?
Tom, I swear to God, if the man could, he would have. Absolutely, he would have. And in my mind was, okay, I'm busy with the two older, and if he wants to take over, go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it. Take over.
So it sounds like he wants, at this point of the story, it sounds like you've got an amazing stepdad.
Yes.
An amazing husband, an amazing stepdad.
Yes.
No jealousy about the ex, nothing like that. And now a guy who his son is born and he wants to be involved.
Yes. So
it's a dream.
Yes. And I said, everything that I've been through in life, I'm finally getting paid off. I got it. Again, good salary, good paying job. So we had a home, we had cars, but the baby was born. So he wasn't picking up a lot of shifts. So then our bills started falling behind, and then we suddenly had to sell the house because we couldn't pay the mortgage because he wouldn't pick up shifts. He did the bare minimum at work so he can stay at home with the baby more. And that's where everything started falling apart. Oh, and also I forgot to tell you, the minute the baby was born, he sold me, you don't have to work anymore. Why don't you stay home and raise our children? Mostly now that the oldest daughter is becoming a teenager and the middle one needs you more. He's getting in trouble a lot at school, blah, blah, blah. They need a full-time parent and all work.
Which again,
Great.
I'm not saying women shouldn't work, so please don't send me a nasty gram here, everybody. But that sounds like he really wants to take care of you and the kids.
Yes.
I haven't seen any red flags yet.
Right. So I quit my job and we depended fully on his income. And like I said, when the baby was born, it wasn't working 5 days or five shifts. I wasn't picking up overtime. It wasn't working holidays. That's what he used to do. So we led a pretty good life. And then the baby was born and he's like, I can't pick up that because I need to be here with the baby. Well, I'm a full-time mom. What am I doing? And again, so we had to sell our house because the mortgage wasn't being paid. We got cars repossessed. Our cable bill was always being turned off. But there was no fire in him to make it better. There was no fire in saying, I'll pick up an extra shift. There was none of that.
I don't understand. I mean, and again, I love my kids. I love my four sons. I would kill or die for any one of them without even thinking twice. I don't understand. I mean, part of my responsibility as their father is to provide. I used to work a 5 to 1:30 shift in a call center. And you think I wanted to get up at 4 a.m. to drive in the snow?
Oh, no.
Hell no. But it's what you do. That's what you do.
Right? Oh, it was, those were the fights. It was like our cable bill's off. Or we sold our house and we went to go rent a smaller house. And it was a constant fight. Like, please, Paul, pick up some work or I'll go back to work. Let me go back to work. Your money is just, it's a waste because what you will have to pay daycare, or we'll have to pay more in taxes. It was always an excuse for me not to go back to work. And he would always promise me, I'll go get it. I'll pick up some shifts. But it never happened. So our fights were very much financially, it was a financial stress all the time.
Okay, so let's get the timeline here again. So you met in early 2006. You get married towards the end of 2006, early 2007 sometime.
Yes.
And the baby's born mid-2007-ish.
Yes.
And from that moment.
That moment.
He just starts, or I don't want to say refuses to go to work, but certainly is not doing, he's not pulling his weight. He's not doing his job as the dad, as the provider, as the, let's just put it this way, he's not keeping his promise to you, at least.
No.
Okay, so it doesn't take a math genius to know that this can't last. How long did this go on?
It went forever, for the lifetime of the marriage. It was a constant financial struggle. Now, then he would, because he also had to keep up with the Joneses a lot, right? So we did have a car repossessed, so then he would work, and then get a new car. Or we sacrificed to move to a smaller house, then he would work, and then we qualified to buy a house. So then we bought another house, and then it started all over again. So it was never consistent. It was, okay, I'm going to appease, and I'm going to keep up with the Joneses, and I'm going to appease Linda, and I'm going to work, and then we'll get her to where she's happy, and then I can slow down again. And he just wanted to be at home. I blame having his firstborn child, or I don't know, it could have been he wanted to make sure I was home because I couldn't have friends. Everybody that I befriended me, there was some kind of issue. Because I told you my two older kids were very much into sports. So the other sports moms, he had issues with. All of a sudden, he had issue with the first husband. Now, the first husband wouldn't be able to come over when he wanted to. I shared holidays with my first husband. Like, we would have Thanksgivings together and Christmases together for the kids. Well, he put a stop to that. So all of a sudden, things started changing.
Sounds like you married your parents.
Without the religion. Yes.
Without the religion.
Yes. It started.
But you can't have friends. Linda, you can play in the front yard.
Right.
But that's it.
He had a negative reason why I couldn't be friends with somebody, with whoever befriended me or I befriended. Now, my only two friends, again, were my two sisters. So, of course, as adults, they would say, hey, you want to go Christmas shopping together? Or you want to go get lunch? The three girls. Tom, I am not kidding you. And my sisters are here to attest to it. The minute I pulled out of the driveway, he was calling my cell phone. Are you okay? Are you all right? I didn't have the baby. He was home with the baby. So it wasn't like he was checking on the baby. Where are you? What time will you be home? And I'd always say, Paul, you stress me out. Why do you want to know? Why are you giving me a timeline? Well, I just want to know you're okay. And I miss you. I miss you when you're not home. So then it became the outings with my sisters started diminishing because either I go out with my sisters and have to deal with that, or I just stay home and not have to deal with the anxiety of him texting me. And it was on the hour. What time will you be home? Are you coming home? Where are you? What? So I just started letting go of that too.
You know, what's so funny about that is that my ex-wife, Trinity, fake name everybody. Every time I tell everybody her name was Trinity, I get a whole bunch of people going, dude, you should have known as soon as you heard the name Trinity. Okay, it's a fake name. Okay, so anyway, Trinity would go to dinner once a month with her sister and a couple of their friends. So it sounds like you going out with your sisters. Right. And it was once a month. I can't remember, first Tuesday of the month or something like that. I don't remember. And they've been doing it for a decade or more. And I was accustomed to it. I missed her. I wanted her to be home, but she also needed to be out and have fun. And I would text her at like 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. I mean, she had to work in the morning. We all had to work in the morning. And she's one of those, I've got to have 8 hours or I'm miserable for a week. And so I'd text her at 11 and just say, are you in a ditch somewhere? And because that, I mean, yes, I missed her, but my concern was that she had literally, but I wasn't texting her on the hour, every hour or anything like that. But then she would give me shit about that. She would say, why are you controlling me like this? I'm going, if I texted every hour or even every, that's control.
Right.
But checking on you at 11 at night on a school night, so to speak, I don't think that's controlling. No. And if it is, then I guess hell or me controlling.
Yeah, no, I would have traded that one text for all the texts I got. And like I said, to the point where I was just like, I would tell my sisters, if you guys want to get together, just come to the house. I'll cook you lunch or I'll make you dinner. It was just easier just to stay at home. So he's there. He sees. His big thing is, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? To the point, I'll give you another example. Hardly ever did I get a haircut. First, because of financials, we couldn't afford it. But second, because every time I went and said, I'm going to go get a haircut, I'm going to go get my nails done, he would have to be at the appointment and stand next to the stylist so he can hear what we would talk about. I don't know. And I would be so embarrassed. I'd look at him. She's doing my hair. And I'd look at him like, go sit down. Go sit down. And no, he stood there the whole appointment right next to me. Or he'd pull up a chair and stand right next to me.
No offense, Linda, but I don't know if I could be less interested in something than whatever the hell you talk about with your hairdresser or whatever you call it.
Right.
I mean, who cares?
Who cares?
Apparently, obviously he thought... Or his worry would be that you were sitting there talking shit about him.
I think so. So remember, you brought up his looks. I think he was very self-conscious. I really do. But his self-confidence, it was something that contradicted himself. Because he would also tell me, Tom, that he was so perfect, he almost walked on water. He would tell me those exact words. He was such a great nurse. He did the jobs of doctors. The doctors would ask him questions. That's how great of a nurse he is. And his words exactly to me was, I'm such a good person. I'm so perfect that I almost walk on water. Promise. That's his self-esteem, the way he looked at himself. So I don't know where that whole insecurity of me talking to a hairdresser or my sisters would come from.
I think it was Margaret Thatcher who once said that a true lady doesn't have to tell you she's a lady. So... wow, Paul's a dick. I don't like him. I don't like him at all. Dumb. Did you go back to work?
I did. Fast forward, my daughter graduated high school. And then 2 years later, my middle son graduated high school. And so I was left with just the little guy. And another thing that I forgot to mention is he was so controlling that I had to homeschool the little guy. Nobody was good enough to watch his son, including teachers. So I homeschooled. He said, I want my son to be homeschooled.
Why the hell didn't he homeschool? He was the one home all the time.
Because maybe that was his thought of giving me something to do, is homeschool him. So I did. I homeschooled him, not for long. When the little one got into third grade, I said, he's got to go to school. Paul didn't allow him to be in sports. My two older kids were raised in sports, so that was hard for me too. And he would say, it costs too much, and he doesn't want to be in sports anyways. And so no sports, no school. I was seeing that he was becoming a recluse, the little guy. He was becoming a recluse. So I said, okay, when he goes into third grade, he's going to school, and I'm getting myself back into the workforce. That's it.
This would have been 2015.
Correct. Late 2014, early 2015. I said, those are the two things. And I don't know if he started seeing my wheels turning, like me not being happy. And so he agreed to it. He said, okay, he'll go to third grade. We'll put him in public school and you go get yourself a part-time job. And I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, we'll do that.
You're getting all uppity there.
Walking. Yeah. Yeah. So I did. I put our son into third grade and I made connections through Facebook, and I had an old coworker when I worked at the hospital, and I still kept in touch with her. And she posted, hey, my company is looking for somebody to fill up this clerical position. Immediately I said, I'm here, you know, I got to get my foot back in the door. They pay. She said, Linda, they pay minimum wage. And I said, I don't care. I just need to get back into the workforce. It was a trucking company and he didn't like it. He was like, I don't know. I don't think so. And I was like, I'm doing this. Oh, Tom. I would be at work and this man would show up to my job just to stand next to me at my desk.
Because he's not working.
Right.
Obviously.
And he was in the area. He was in. Yeah, the kids are in school. So it's not like the kids wanted to come see me. And even if the kids wanted to see me, you say, okay, she'll be home after school. You know what I mean? Or after work. But no, he would show up. He was in the area. I didn't work anywhere where he had to be. I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, I was in the area and I just came by to say hi. I was so humiliated and embarrassed. And I was like, oh my God. And he would just stand there. He would just stand there and I'd be like, Paul, you need to go. I'm working. Or do you want, I'll log off and we can go have lunch together and then you'll go home. Like, okay. But he would stand there. And there was this one time I'll never forget. I had a coworker and he did it. He came in and he stood there and just stood there at my desk. And after he left, the coworker giggled. And it was a male coworker and he giggled. And he goes, you know what he's doing, right? And I said, what? He goes, you know what your husband's doing when he comes and stands next to you? And I said, no, what? He goes, he's pissing on his property. I was so embarrassed, Tom. I went home and I was like, don't you ever come to my work. That's a place of business. How unprofessional. Oh, that was it. Who told you that? And that's because he wants you and blah, blah, blah. The jealousy just went from like, you need to quit. You're working around all these truck drivers. And it was just miserable. It was just...
He's just marking his territory by showing up. And so all of the truck drivers, who, by the way, are known for being totally hot, all these truck drivers who you were going to go home with knew that you were his property.
I was taken. Yeah, not that I was taken. And he was very much in my life. Obviously, he was standing next to my desk. Yeah.
Holy crap. Mm-hmm. Wow. He can almost walk on water, can't he?
Right?
Look at that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I put up with. And in my thought, at this point in time, I knew like I was not a happy person. I was not happy.
Yeah.
But I had three kids now making minimum wage. What do I do? I don't want.
You got to feel trapped.
Yeah. And.
But he's not making shit.
No, Tom, there goes another car being repossessed. There goes another bill. Not only that, never paid taxes. The 9-point-something years that we were together, that man never paid taxes. He would always go exempt in his W-2s and never pay taxes at the end. Now, remember.
How do you get away with that?
And he took care of everything. He took care of all the finances. He took care of all the bills. He took care of everything, Tom, because I didn't work. So it was his stuff to take care of. I had no idea. None. All that came to light in court.
Wow.
Yeah. One day my daughter came home from work. She was a young adult, and she comes in, and I'm sitting in the dark, and she turns on the light, and I startled her, and she looked at me. She goes, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Nothing." She goes, "What are you doing in the dark?" And I said, "Nothing." And then she goes, "Mom," she goes, "What happened to you?" She goes, "You have no life in your eyes." That, Tom, I was like, what? That's all I had to hear, because again, I didn't want to be my mom. No, I didn't want to be my mother. So when my oldest told me that, I said, oh no, oh no, I got to do something. And out of emotions, I told him I'm leaving. Now, during this time, which I guess I'm jumping too much, it was during the era of Barack Obama.
When was that? 2007. Mm-hmm. So this is when you were first getting together.
Yeah. This has a lot to do with clicking and stuff clicking and what he never was. And all of a sudden, he became so right-wing, Tom. I mean, so right-winged that he would... Rush Limbaugh, that Hannity guy, Fox News, that was all that he listened to. That was all that was on the TV. Everything. I don't know if you remember in those days that the right wing, like they adopted that flag. It was a yellow flag and it said, don't step on, don't, yeah, that with the snake.
It's the Gadsden flag.
Yeah. So one day I come home from, I don't know where I was at. I come home and it's hanging on my, in my home, it, hanging outside of my door. And I looked at it and I said, oh, no. I said, no, Pa, no, we can't have that. We can't have that out. I mean, do you realize I'm not right wing? Do you realize my color? Like, no. And he looked at me and this was this straight face. And he said, I'm the only one that works. I make the house payment. This is my house. This, whatever I want hung on the house is going to be hung. That's it.
What an asshole.
Yeah. So I had to live with this stupid flag that every time I walked in and out of the house, I would look at it and just shake my head. And yeah, I don't know what it was. It just, politics was never an issue until Barack Obama was going to be voted in. And then all of a sudden he was like right wing, mega right wing. I mean, mega right wing and hateful.
So before we go any further, I think we probably got to make it very clear to our listeners. This is not a political show. We have our politics, we have our beliefs, and that's okay. Whatever your beliefs are, you can have them. But I think what we're about to hear, I haven't heard this story, but I'm going to predict that what we're about to hear is that politics, it didn't tear this family apart, but it certainly helped. It added fuel to the fire, if nothing else. It might have started the fire, but at the very least, it added fuel to the fire. So again, if you take anything away from this episode, how about don't let politics cloud your personal life.
Exactly.
It should not become your identity.
Exactly.
And by the way, for anyone that's wondering, people always ask me this when I'm doing TikToks and stuff like that. I am very conservative. I believe I'm not a Republican, though, because I think the Republican Party has gone way off the deep end. I'm a libertarian, and basically I'm what people would probably call very moderate in today's world. But anyway, again, not that we want to make this a political show.
Right.
Everybody out there have your own beliefs and let me have mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I thought it would be. Even though we didn't agree on politics, I thought he would have respect to not put that in my face or not. I mean, down to my son, my two oldest, if you ask them to the day, and they're mixed children, meaning their father Caucasian and I'm Nicaraguan. But if you ask my children, they'll say we're Nicaraguan. My mom's parents are Nicaraguan. We're Nicaraguan. So down the line, when his child was born or growing up, and I would say, you're Nicaraguan. I would call him by his first name. You're Nicaraguan. And I was teaching him how to say that, like I did my two older kids. He would interject and he'd say, no, you're not. Your mom is American. Your dad's American. You're American.
America.
And he would like, Tom, you're American, you're American. And I was seeing all these little things. I would get up like any, if you know, any Hispanic mom gets up and it, on Saturdays to clean the house, and we turn on some cumbias or salsa to wake up the kids to come help clean. Tom, he would come out of nowhere and either turn off the radio or put it on country. No Spanish music in the home.
Wow. I mean, okay, musical tastes aside, I mean, I guess it's his house, it's his, right? So exactly, he can play whatever music he wants.
Exactly.
Don't you dare have any of that Mexican music playing in my house.
Exactly. And all...
Are we going to get to the part of the story where he moves to Idaho and joins a cult or anything?
Let me tell you what his goal was. And this is no joke. This is not saying it because you just said that. I swear to God, his goal, and he would tell me this, I want to move to Idaho or somewhere back there, Montana was mine, Idaho or Montana, where our closest neighbor is 5 miles away. And I want to live off the land. I want to garden and live off the land. I'm thinking, I can't even keep a plant alive. I'm not going to be gardening. And I'm thinking, this man's going to take me to far away where I'm not going to be able to talk to people. He didn't want to live near anybody. He wanted to live isolated, just me, him, and the kids.
Wow, he really is your parents without the religion.
Yes, and the culture. I mean, he's a different culture, so that had a lot to do with it. And like you said, I don't want this to become political or even like a cultural thing, but he definitely, that was always in the forefront, always in the front. Everything he would want to talk about with me was politics, about how this country is going to shit because we're having our first Black president, or about, he would quote Hannity all the time, or he would quote Rush Limbaugh all the time. And I was like, oh God, I can't stand that. Like, that's where I started becoming very like detached. And remember, I have an attached personality, I just started becoming very detached and resentful. I resented him. Everything he would talk about was just would make my skin crawl.
Yes, I just don't get it. My ex and I, Trinity, we used to talk politics all the time, but we actually agreed.
Yeah.
We had very common belief systems. And I used to write for a political blog. So I've been I'm not very political anymore at all. But I used to be very political. And I would write for a political blog. I used to have a YouTube channel for all my political things. I mean, I was totally into it. And she supported it. She would read the scripts with me. She was there. Yeah. I can't imagine. I just can't even imagine the idea of trying to cram that down my wife's throat, that I will have the Gadsden flag. I will play country music, and you're not going to play my music or your music. I got to ask you this question. His mom, you said earlier, she didn't like you from day one. And part of it was the three different dads,
right,
but part of it is your Nicaraguan heritage.
Yes.
We are a product of our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that he sought you out because you were a brown person, as you've said, and so that he could control you and that he could always be better than you?
I believe he always thought that, yes. I believe he's always thought he was better than me because of the way he was raised. I don't know why he sought me out.
So it wasn't just that, hey, I'm almost on water. She's certainly not about to walk on water. I'm just one step away
right
from that. It's not just that he's a nurse and you're just a mere secretary. It's that you're brown and he's
correct
not.
I do believe that.
Again, Paul, you're a dick. All right.
Did you know you can get divorced without hiring an attorney? Let OurDivorce.com guide you through our three-step process for a simple flat fee. Visit OurDivorce.com to learn more and get started today.
Okay, so you have this political, I was going to say undertone, but it's an overtone. Mm-hmm. This is political overtone throughout your marriage. Mm-hmm. From very early on, it sounds
right
like. You've got this kind of, I want to be a stay-at-home dad, but I also want you to be a stay-at-home mom, and that works if you're independently wealthy. So you've got two really big money and politics. Those are two pretty big things to fight about on a regular basis. I mean, you've got religion. Did you guys ever fight about religion at all?
No, because I just, I have a distaste of religion, so I wouldn't even bring it up. And nothing was, like, he didn't not want to celebrate anything. We still celebrated and we still did for the kids and stuff like that. So religion wasn't part of it.
Okay. What about sex? Was that a fight?
It was, because I didn't want any.
Right. Yeah. Which, by the way, I understand that. I get it. But so you did fight about sex.
Yes.
And did you fight about in-laws?
Yes. We fought about in-laws a lot. Not my parents, but, you know, his parents. And I would always tell him, why don't you stand up for me? Why don't you tell your mom something? And he knew his mom was hateful. He knew who his mom was. So he kept us separate. He did keep us separate. We would probably visit his mom maybe once a year before she passed. Yeah.
Yeah, because it is like the five F's of marriage.
Yeah.
Friends, family, faith, finances, and sex. And faith has now become politics. So politics fits into the faith category now. But those are the five F's of marriage. And if you can figure out how to get those five things in line, or at least acceptable for each, I think you have a shot.
Yeah, we didn't.
but it sounds like all five of those things were way out of whack from day one. Mm-hmm. I'm almost exhausted hearing this miserable. I mean, I can't decide which is worse, your childhood or your third marriage.
That's exactly how I looked at which was miserable. And I'll tell you right now, my third marriage, I would go through my childhood again and again, rather than go through what I've recently gone through. And the demise is 2015, when my daughter told me that, and I said, I gotta go. And remember, I was making minimum wage, but I couldn't stand being there, Tom. I had to go. So I packed a bag and I said, I'm leaving. And he says, you're what? I said, I'm leaving. I'm miserable. I hate it. I hate it here. I hate who I'm becoming. I hate who my children are seeing me become. And he looked at me straight in the eyes, Tom, and I'll never forget. This is like if he told me 2 minutes ago, he looked at me in the eye. And he says, if you walk out that door, I'm going to make you pay where it hurts the most with your kid. And I looked at him and I picked up my bag and I said, fuck you. And I left. I had nowhere to go, Tom. I had nowhere to go. I didn't want to go to my parents or my sisters because I didn't want another failed marriage, right? I didn't want to admit that I have failed again. So I couch surfed with coworkers. They would give me their couch. Our younger son, I left him and I walked out and I couch surfed for a while. And I would always go back to the home. After work, I would go back to the home and I would cook dinner for my son and do homework with him and tuck him into bed. And then I would leave again and I would stay on couches until like about 6 to 9 months. I rented a garage because I was only making minimum wage. I couldn't afford an apartment in California. So I rented a garage from a coworker's mom.
This is one of those garages that I've seen in Southern Cal, right? Where they've kind of turned it into a bedroom.
It was a garage. It was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a garage where I tell you, it was a mouse infested garage. But I'd rather be there than be miserable. And in my thought, Tom, I was like, I'm going to build myself up where I get another job. And I can afford an apartment and I can afford our younger son to come stay with me. But for now, I got a roof over my head. I got a job to eat with. And I can still go visit my son, go cook him dinner, go tuck him in and go make sure he does his homework. That was my thought. As long as I have a roof over my head and I'm not sleeping in my car, you know, this is okay. This is okay. Now, meanwhile, I had no idea that was the biggest mistake I made, because he went and he got an attorney and I abandoned the home.
Mm.
So when we went through child custody, It was horrible, Tom. It was horrible. His attorney, of course, he's back at picking up shifts because he needs money to pay the attorney. And he got a really good attorney compared to what I can afford. And the attorney fought and said, I abandoned my son and I abandoned the home. And every time California, you go through mediation. You go to mediation before you go to in front of a judge. And we had three sessions of mediation. One with me, one with my son and the mediator, and one with just him. So we each got our time with the mediator. And he was well coached. My son was really well. Now, at this time, he was barely 9, turning 10. He was turning 10. Very much into video games, Tom. He is one of those kids, right? He has to have every kind of PlayStation, Xbox, and the newest and greatest game. He's a gamer. What he titled gamer. So every time we either went to mediation or went to court, the ex-husband would tell him, you know, if you say this and this, we'll go to GameStop afterwards. And we'll buy you whatever game you want. If you say this and this, he was very much coached. And how I know that is because I have recordings of my son telling me, my dad tells me what to say. And after I say it, he takes me to GameStop. And I got into his bank account. When there's a will and there's a way, right? So I got into his bank account and I would see the charges at GameStop every single time we had court. So matched. And my attorney showed the recording and the receipts that I printed out to the judge. And I was almost fined because they said it was illegal to do that. So it played against me. So my proof played against me. Everything, Tom, I did was against me. The mediators wrote a report and told the judge that my son and my ex-husband are best friends. So she can't see taking my son away from his best friend. And I was like, I don't want to take him away. I just want 50-50. Now, remember the relationship I had with my ex-husband. That's what I wanted for my son. I love my son more than I hated my ex-husband. So I wanted both of us in his life. And true to his word, he got me where it hurt the most. Because I left him, he did parental alienation. Now, you can't, that's so hard to prove that I lost my son for a long time.
I'm so sorry. This was in 2015.
Yes, 2015. We went through court for 2 years. And that's when I found out. Now, by this time, Tom, I was getting my minimum wage job. I started working two jobs to be able to afford to live. And one of them, my wages were starting to get garnished by the IRS. Remember, he didn't pay taxes. And I was like, wait a minute. I didn't work for almost 10 years. What about him? Before he filed for divorce, he filed for bankruptcy. And he got that. Yeah. So now they're coming after me. And he's free and clear.
There have been a few episodes where I've actually stated how bad I hate my guest's ex. But Paul now takes the cake. That just put him over the top for me he's doing all this.
Yeah, this is the hardest thing I've ever been through. And I would couch surf all over again. I would rent that dirty garage. I will pay his taxes as long as he allowed me to have a relationship with my son. That's all I wanted. Nope. I lost my son for a long time. Anyways, the court said, okay, you're the weekend. You're the typical roles reversed. So I only got my son on the weekends and he had him full time. Okay. The weekends that I got my son, I would show up and they would be gone. And gone. He would make sure he would be gone. So I'd be there knocking on the door to visit my son, to get my son for my weekends, and he would be gone. Then when he was there, he would call me from his phone and I was in the driveway and he would call me and he would say, he doesn't want to go with you. So my attorney, by my attorney's advice, I had to call the local PD and they would have to come out. And it was so much that the PD came out. They finally told me, Linda, what are you doing? Your son is going to resent you more. Because you would hear my son say, Mom, I can't believe you called the cops on me. So he would tell my son, I called the cops on my son to make my son come with me. So the PD said, look, off the record, I can't force that kid to come out. He doesn't want to come out. And what you're doing is you're making your son resent you. He goes, stop fighting. If your son doesn't want to see you, he doesn't want to see you. And I stopped it. I had to, for almost 3 years, I had no communication with my son.
Ugh.
That didn't stop me from buying Christmas presents and dropping them off at the doorstep and sending him letters, text messages, because my son has a cell phone. That didn't stop me from doing that. But they would go unanswered.
How was your older kids? Were they in Paul's life at all at this point?
They tried to maintain a relationship with him because of their sibling, their young brother, their little brother. But it became to the point, Tom, where they weren't even allowed to call him. Paul would block them from his cell phone, from my son's cell phone, so that the siblings couldn't get a hold of him. It became to where my sisters couldn't see their nephew anymore. He alienated the younger one. So it was just him and the younger one. And then come to find out, what he would tell the younger one was, if you go visit your mom, I'll miss you too much. I'll miss you too much. So you can't go visit your mom. You got to stay with me. Your mom has your brother and your sister. I don't have anybody but you. So that started playing in my younger son's mind. Like, my mom has my brother and my sister. I'll stay here with my dad. Like, he started manipulating my younger one to believe that if he left, his dad would miss him too much. And my mom abandoned me anyways.
Boy, he is just he's good.
He kept his word.
He's very good.
He kept his word. He got me where it hurt me the most, my son.
So you go through this 3 years of no contact.
Yeah.
You've been couch surfing. You've got an apartment or a garage.
Yeah.
You're working a couple of jobs. You've got garnishments.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Linda. At some point, the divorce was final.
Yes.
When was that?
September of 2019.
Okay. So 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're back in contact with your son.
Now I am. Yes.
How did that come about?
Funny thing. During this time, I got a better job. I met somebody else, thank God. And so my life was getting back to normal. And I was at work. I don't know how the ex got my office number, but next thing I know, I'm picking up my office number and it's him. And he said,
It's Paul.
And he says, I need your help. I need my help. And I said, with what? Now, I'm thinking financially, I'm thinking, what do you need my help with? Because you haven't let me even talk to my son, right? And he goes, our son is failing school. He doesn't care about his hygiene. I need your help. Our son is saying he wants to see you. And I said, when, where, how? I'll leave right now. Right now. And he goes, okay, you can pick him up for dinner.
Really?
So I picked him up for dinner. I picked up the younger one. At this point, he's 14 going on 15. And this is just recently because my son is 15. I took him to my home where my partner is. He met my partner and we're sitting eating dinner, Tom. And he says, I hate my dad. And I said, what? He goes, it's so hard to be with my dad because I'm struggling with my sexuality. And my dad says it's a phase and he doesn't want to hear it. I just started crying because my son is struggling and I can't even be there for him. So my partner at that point jumped in and he said, son, whatever you're struggling with, we will help you. Whatever you think you are, if you think you like boys or if you like girls or if you like both, we're here for you. We love you. We want you in our life. We are here for you. And my son just started crying. I just started bawling at that point. And I think at that point, Tom, he understood where the problem was this whole time. At that point, it clicked to him that I came out to my dad and he said it was a phase. The dad took him to Christian therapy to try to get the gay out of him.
Pray away the gay.
Yeah, to pray the gay away. When he came out to me, I hugged him and I started crying. And even my partner was like, we love you no matter what. So I think that's where my son started seeing the difference. He started seeing the difference. It's still work. It's still work because now my son says, I want to go live with mom. And the dad says, if you go live with your mom, I'll die.
Oh, my crap. I fucking hate him. What a dick.
So the guilt is with my son again. So he manipulates my son to not come and live with me. So that's where we're at.
So how long ago was this? He came to your house for the first time? Just within the last couple of months?
No, it's going on a year now. Yeah.
Okay. So you've had your son in your life for a year. And he told you early on, was that first night?
I think he did it to it was that night. And I really do think it was to test me to see how I was going to react because he was very standoffish. And then when we were literally cutting into our steaks when he said, I hate my dad. And we looked at him. We hadn't brought up the dad. We were just like welcoming him. Thank you. We were thanking him to come because he's seeing me. My partner was like, son, your mom misses you so much. This is your home. Please make it a regular visit, but we're not going to pressure you whenever you want. And my partner even told him, if your mom's working, call me. I'll go pick you up so you can feel at home. We want you to feel at home. So we were giving him the homecoming when he came out with, I'm struggling with my sexuality. And I think it was more of a test for him to see how we were going to react versus how his dad reacted.
So I have a question about that, because as a lot of people know, I have a gay son. And as parents, we know that we screw up all the time. One area that I think I did it right. Sometimes you can pat yourself on the back when you did it right. When Gage came out to me as gay, I just said, I love you. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's I love you. Right. He knew from literally the second that he told me that I loved him and I didn't care. He's living with this awesome guy who I consider my own son. That's one of those things that you do right. And hopefully you do more right than wrong. But as parents, you screw up all the time. I get it. But here you are a year later. I guess my question to you, though, is because when Gage came out to me, it was not, I'm struggling. He just said, I'm gay. And so your son saying he's struggling a year later, how is it now? Is he struggling or has he figured out who he is?
Not yet. He hasn't.
Is that dad guilt, though?
Tom, I do believe it is. I do believe it's dad guilt. Is it that he's rebellion against his dad? Because he knows his dad is extreme. And he hates that about his dad. So is he rebellion against his dad? Or is he really struggling? Or is he really found himself? Like I said, we don't care. We don't care.
Yeah.
And funny part about it, my family, my very religious family, they don't care. They just want him in the life, in our life.
Wow.
So we don't care. So we're giving him time to figure it out. And like I told him, babe, I don't care who you fall in love with. Just as long as you fall in love, because it's the most beautiful thing. And that person loves and respects you just the way you love and respect that person. I don't care.
As long as they're happy.
As long as they're happy. That's all I want.
That's all that matters.
Yep. For all three of my kids.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. Almost a happy ending? Maybe?
Almost a happy ending. I have a relationship back with my youngest. It's still a struggle. It's still a fight. Like I said, every time he says, I want to go live with mom or I want to go see mom, sometimes I have to message his friends because I haven't heard from him in a day or so. And I want to make sure he's okay. He'll come back and say, oh, somebody blocked you. Or, oh, I got my phone taken away, because his dad will take his phone and read my messages with him, our messages, and control that.
He's just pissing on his property, isn't he?
Very much so. And I just think, Tom, this is going to be in my lifetime. This is going to be a lifetime of this. Because as much as I want our youngest son to find his voice, and he does when it comes to me, when it's just him and I and we have conversations, you can hear that he's looking for that voice, to be that strength, to be able to say, fuck you, dad. You've taken this woman from me for a long time. I'm just waiting for that day, Tom. I'm waiting for that day. Right now, he's still working him. It's still working him.
I guess my question now is, because your son is, what'd you say, 15?
15.
And Paul has full legal custody, I assume.
I've never lost legal custody. He just has physical custody of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I guess I just was worried that Paul could, I don't know, pack up and move to Idaho, where all your neighbors are 10 miles apart.
I won't doubt that. He knows he's smart, and he knows I'll jump on that and saying he crossed state lines. But, you know, I get a lot of people saying the youngest is now at legal age to say who he wants to go with. And yeah, he is. But that doesn't help what's going on up here.
Right.
Yeah. So he can. Okay. And I tell him all the time, I tell him, I'll go back to court if you don't fight against me. And he says, I know, mom. I said, so when you're ready to fight with me and not against me, I'll go back to court. And he goes, okay. But it's never that, okay, let's do it.
Right.
So he understands that the custody battle, he fought against me. He did everything his dad told him to do. They did everything to make sure I was completely out of life. And so that he understands, that's what I refer to. Don't fight against me. If you're ready, we'll fight together. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Let's get a quick update on your life, though. So you're with someone.
Yes.
You've been together for at least a year. How long have you
been? We've been together for going on 2 years. Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah. And both adults, both have grown kids. Like he's a dad of 2 grown adults. And it's the best life I have ever had. I mean, this man, if it wasn't for him, Tom, I don't know where I'd be, because I went through this alone. Like I told you in the beginning, this is the first time I actually talk in detail about everything I went through. My sister just found out. I told my sister I was coming on your podcast, and she just found out that I was couch surfing and I rented a garage. They had no idea. I didn't want to, in my mind, this was my mistake to clean up. And I really thought I was going to be able to get through with it, get out of it, and say, I did it. I have my 3 kids with me. I did it. I didn't think that I would have such a strong battle, such a big fight. $20,000 later, I'm still paying my attorney.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. People have heard me say it before. My first divorce took 19 months and cost me $40,000. And I think all I got out of it was a blender. That's about all I got.
Yeah. I have a great man that stands by my side. He accepts my kids no matter what. We have a great life. He was with me celebrating my son's baby shower at my ex-husband's house.
That's great. So more than a wink.
Yeah, more than a wink. Definitely more than a wink. Yeah. So yeah, that's my happy end. My happy right there ending. Of course, it's not an ending. It won't be an ending until I know that my son is happy.
Yeah. That's perfect. You've been through what, as far as I'm concerned, is, I hate to say it so bluntly, but you've had a pretty shitty life. Not by your own making necessarily. I mean, obviously you bear your part of the responsibility, yes. But you've been through some man, you've been through it. And my heart goes out to you. So for those that are either going through what you've been through or those of us who've never been through what you've been through, what have you learned?
I've learned to expect the worst out of people. Ugh. Yeah. And I've learned my biggest advice to anybody having to go through a divorce and they have children is love your children more than you hate your ex. There's nothing in this world, no affairs, no kind of like physical abuse or anything like that should overpower the love for your children. And your children need you both. You both created them. They need you both. So no matter what, put that aside. All the feelings you have for your ex, put it aside and just put your children first. Love your child more than you hate your ex.
It's beautiful. If everyone had that attitude, can you even imagine the world we'd live in?
No. I see it, Tom. I see my two older children. They're so successful. I mean, if I could just take 5 minutes to brag about them. One is in Colombia getting her master's, traveling the world right now. She's in South America, maybe there for a year. She just had a wedding in Paris. The other one lives in Hawaii, one of the most expensive states in the United States, and creating his own little family. Very successful. Two very successful kids with two very loving parents. Two parents that showed them that we loved them more than we hated each other.
Yeah.
And then I have my little guy who's struggling through a lot. Who, you know, has to be in counseling, and he's in continuation school right now. And that has a lot to do with what's going on up here. I have the proof of what happens when parents put the kids first and what happens when you let emotions get the best of you.
I love your advice, and I hope everybody listening takes it. I see too many TikToks every day. I see TikToks of women saying, my husband cheated on me, so I don't let him see the kids. Or I did this to make it harder for my husband to see his kids. Screw you. But by the same token, the very first guest on this show, Christina Rose, love her to death. She just posted a TikTok yesterday, I believe. Her ex-husband reached out to her this week and texted her and said, I know it's been over a year since I've reached out and checked in on the kids. I've been busy. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Bullshit. Love your children.
Love your children. That's it.
Yeah. Linda, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being so open. It's tugged at my heartstrings today, I promise.
Thank you for having me, Tom. I've used this as my therapy, finally getting my story out there.
Appreciate it. Although I'm not a therapist. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Wow, you guys. Such great advice. Seriously. Can you imagine a world where divorcing couples prioritize their children over their own anger? I get so tired of seeing one parent claim to be protecting their children because the other parent cheated or doesn't share the same religious beliefs. Unless the other parent poses a physical threat to your child, please do everything you can to cooperate with the other parent and to make it easy for your kids to spend time with both parents. I'd also like to add one more piece of advice for everyone listening that has grown children, young children, or who might someday have children. I want you to close your eyes and imagine your son or daughter coming out to you as gay. Now imagine your reaction. Are you angry? Do you feel like you've failed somehow? Because unless your only thought is about their happiness, you're doing it wrong. I encourage you to get therapy or read a book about loving your children more than yourself. And then do the exercise again. And keep doing it until your reaction is one of unconditional love and acceptance. That's called good parenting. And if your religious or political beliefs make that impossible, then you're in the wrong religion or the wrong political party. I can't thank Linda enough for being on the show. And thanks to you for listening. If you like today's show, please show it to the world by giving us 5 stars on whatever app you're using right now. It really helps spread the word. That's all for this week. I hope you have an amazing rest of your week. Bye.
Possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's 3-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting ourdivorce.com today.